I think looking at the big picture, for those of us who want to be very good lawyers, who want to have very successful careers, doing the work is at the core of growing. It really involves doing the work. I view that as a necessary sacrifice a lot of the time. I think where it gets a little bit trickier is where it starts to feel as though the job or the career starts to really impose upon or really infringe on someone's personal life, their family life, their relationships. But I think when you look at the big picture and you try to keep the larger goals in mind, so long as you feel empowered and that you're taking the steps to be the lawyer that you want to be, then all of the other stuff, the sacrifices at the end of the day, at least in my experience, are really worth it.
Welcome to Lawyers Who Lead, a podcast that challenges the notion that the law lags behind. I'm your host, Sigal Barnes. Each week, I invite a lawyer who's making powerful changes through extraordinary leadership. In each episode, we'll travel through another lawyer's life, identify what they do best, and then devise how to apply these concepts to your own world. So let's get to it. Welcome to Lawyers Who Lead. I'm your host, Sigal Barnes. Our guest today is an experienced trial lawyer specializing in complex commercial litigation at Mintz, a full-service Am Law 100 law firm employing approximately 600-plus attorneys serving clients worldwide. This lawyer is an active member of the firm's sports and entertainment practice, where he counsels clients in personal business, branding and licensing, league compliance, investigations, and litigation. He also serves on the firm's advisory committee to address issues related to the recruitment and retention of Black attorneys and remains actively involved in the firm's diversity recruitment efforts. Please welcome our next lawyer who leads, Alan Matthew. Alan, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. I'm so excited to have you here. And we had such a wonderful conversation right before this that I was like, listen, we have to stop because we need to save this for our listeners. So I'm very excited for our listeners to hear all about your story. But before we begin, can we start with a little bit of gratitude? What's your favorite thing that happened so far today?
Today's actually been exciting so far. It's been an exciting morning. I didn't tell you this in our conversation beforehand, but today it will be announced that I'm going to be honored by an organization called Diverse Representation, which features Black agents, attorneys, managers, and publicists in the sports and entertainment space. And I will be on their 10 to watch in 2024 list.
Oh my God. Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Tell
me a little bit about the organization.
Yeah. So it's an organization that I've been following for many years, and they do a lot of programming and they feature a number of high profile executives, agents, managers, attorneys who are operating in the space, and really just highlighting the importance of not only diversity of the folks who are in this space, but the impact that they have, particularly representing talent that's consisted of ethnic minorities. So it's an organization that I really love a lot and am really honored that they chose me this year.
Congratulations again. That's fantastic.
Thank you. What
Appreciate a great
that.
Gratitude. I'm so glad you didn't tell me beforehand. I get to experience it with the listeners at the same time.
Absolutely. Appreciate that.
All right. So let's begin. Let's start with your lawyer origin story. How did it all start for you?
What's interesting, it actually stemmed from a sad story. So my maternal grandfather, I never knew him. He died when my mom was pretty young. He was a prosecutor in Haiti. When my mom was, I think, around 6-7 years old, my grandfather was arrested and executed by the dictator of Haiti purely for being a political opponent of the regime. And my grandmother, who's still with us and here in the United States, has always wanted another attorney in the family. And it actually worked out nicely because as I was growing up, I developed a strong interest in law and government and politics. And even as a high schooler, it was something that really interested me. And I like to tell people that I feel like it runs in my blood and it runs in the family. And of course, my twin brother eventually ended up becoming a lawyer as well. In terms of origin, I really like to say that it's part of who I am. It's always been part of who I am.
When did you hear this story first? And how much of the story do you think influenced your trajectory?
It's a good question. Throughout my childhood, and I think I was spared some of the details pretty young, obviously, but I grew up with stories about my grandfather. My brother and I both did. It was very much part of the way we grew up, viewing him as a role model, notwithstanding the fact that we had never gotten the opportunity to meet him in person. So it really affected my trajectory in many ways, not only because I wanted to become a lawyer like him, but also it was a lesson in standing up for what you believe in, because he could have just as easily stepped back and not spoken on political issues, or recognizing that he was dealing with a violent dictator, choose to capitulate in whatever ways he was being demanded to. But he was a man of principle and was willing to lay down liberty and life to stand up for those ideals. And I think that's really admirable. I can't say that I'm quite in the position to be taking as big or as significant of risks as he did in terms of standing up for my principles, but it's a good example to follow.
What was his name?
Funkel Dizier.
Thank you for sharing his story and how it influenced you. The power of stories really helps legacies live on. And so it's really humbling to be a part of recording his story, but also to see that living on between you and your brother, who is Eric. Hi, Eric. So yeah, I love that. Thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. So after I graduated from college, I actually worked at my undergraduate institution, Bowdoin College, for a couple of years. And while I was there, developed some really excellent mentors who are attorneys here in Boston. And three guys in particular, their names are Joe Curtin, Emmett Line, and Michelle Bomani. The three of them strongly got behind my interest in the law, strongly encouraged me to look at Boston and the Boston schools. And Joe ended up hiring me at the law firm where I've been my entire career. So when I got to that firm, Mint, I very quickly decided that I wanted to get into sports and entertainment law, as well as the litigation work that I was already doing, and got connected with the three co-chairs of the sports and entertainment group at the time. And there was one in particular who I really wanted to meet and work with, particularly given kind of the makeup of his client base. And I also knew that he wasn't someone who regularly worked with associates in the firm, particularly not junior associates, particularly given the nature of the work. It's a very steep learning curve. And I was just very persistent with him. I would respond to every conflict check email he sent out. I would try to get time on his calendar. And we were in different cities. I'm based here in Boston. He's based in both New York and Atlanta. So eventually we were at a retreat for the minority attorneys at the firm. And I spotted him immediately when I walked in, pulled up a chair next to him and said, "Listen, I really want to work with you. Let's find a way to make this happen." And very soon thereafter, he had a matter that popped up that was specific to the skill set of a litigator. And he reached out to me and said, "I've got something that I could use your help on, but I need it urgently." And this was at like 7:30 in the morning. And I responded within 2 minutes. And it was, in fact, very urgent. We got hired by the client pretty late in the game. And the stuff that needed to get done very quickly. So this was pre-COVID. I didn't even go into the office that day. I just worked remotely and got started working around 7:30 with him. And he was very happy with how that played out. And that one opportunity became another and then another. And then before I knew it, I was a sports and entertainment lawyer as well as a litigator.
Question I had for you is that you really wanted to get into sports and entertainment. What inspired you to want to go into that type of law?
I think it's a couple of things. One, I was an avid sports fan growing up and I played sports growing up. But two, and probably more importantly, in the context of the practice of law, it's the one practice area that I'm involved in where I see a lot of people that look like me. And that's something that's been really special to me over my, 7 years of practice. And it really was illuminated for me when I was, I want to say maybe a third year. We were representing this budding amateur / professional sports league. And I was on a Zoom call and I looked at all the faces on the screen and every single person on the call was Black. That was the attorneys, the executives, that was the investors, everybody. And that's something, frankly, that I have not experienced ever in the practice of law. And it was really a special moment for me and something that I reflected a lot on and spoke with my mentor, who was also on the call. It is an area where people of color are certainly not underrepresented in terms of the talent, but we still have work to do in terms of the executives, the attorneys, all the other folks behind the scenes. And to be able to kind of step into an industry like that and to step into a practice area like that and feel that I am valued specifically because of that perspective that I bring is something that's been really cool to me. And that's not to say that I don't get that kind of appreciation and value from other practice areas, but I think on a consistent basis, doing it in the sports entertainment space has been very cool for me.
Amazing. I know that you said that you got connected with three co-chairs at the Sports and Entertainment Law Practice Group. How did you get connected with them?
Yeah, so one of them, it was when I was a summer associate. He was based in the Boston office, and I learned that he did sports entertainment. His name is Keith Carroll, and just reached out to him. I just sent him a cold email and said, hey, I really want to get involved in your practice. Might there be opportunities for me to shadow, to work on anything that you've got going on, et cetera? And he very graciously did. He got me involved very quickly as a summer associate and then told me, hey, you should really meet this other partner who's going to be up in the Boston office at some point next week. And so I had coffee with him, with Tyrone. And that was a really great conversation. Started getting involved in some of the stuff that he was doing. The one person I didn't get a chance to meet when I was a summer associate was Tony, who ended up becoming my closest mentor. And so Tony was the one who I ended up having to pull aside once I actually got to the firm full time. But Tony's practice is very cool. And the way that he got into the practice of sports entertainment law is actually an even cooler story than mine. But I learned of his story and really wanted to work with him. And yeah, like I said, eventually after several months of persisting, we made it happen.
I'm sensing like this theme of being really proactive and persistent, really focused and clear on what you wanted and having the confidence to go out there and ask for the work and reach out and be there to help however you need to. One, where does that come from, that persistence, that proactivity? And then two, is there any advice that you can give to other people who are looking to follow in your footsteps and be more proactive, or perhaps a little scared about it?
The culture of the legal industry is a complicated one. And it's one that in many ways, through the work that I'm doing, both inside the firm and outside the firm, I'm trying to combat some of the difficulties that come with being in the legal industry and particularly big law. So I think in terms of seeking the opportunities, in many ways, I felt if you really want to do this, you have no choice but to be proactive about it, because sitting back and hoping that it will come is likely not going to be the best strategy. In terms of the advice that I would give, just do it, right? There are so many things, there are so many obstacles that will be thrown at you in this industry kind of as it is. Don't let your own fear and don't let your own apprehension be one of those obstacles. Jump in and try to, as best you can, shape your career in the way you want to. And that's something that I try to talk to a lot with both law students and young attorneys that I mentor, because I really do think that attorneys should be empowered and attorneys should make of their practice what they want it to be. And for me, that meant being a good litigator, a good trial attorney, but also being in the sports entertainment space and working on matters that I'm passionate about. And I do try to share that message with some of the younger folks as they're coming up, because it's not always easy. And if you let it, the industry can shape your career for you, which sometimes works out for people, but in many times it doesn't, right? Because ultimately, this is what we do for a living, right? And we spend very long hours doing this. So my view is, if I'm going to be spending many hours of my day, my nights, my weekends doing something, why not make it something that I love? And that's why my career has been so rewarding so far. But yeah, I always tell folks, as best you can, try to fight the internal voice and to some degree fight the external voices that you're hearing where appropriate, obviously, and find the right people. And if you're finding that what you want to do isn't consistent or aligned with where you are, find somewhere else to be.
Yeah, make those moves.
And I will say my firm has been incredibly supportive, and I've been at my firm my entire career since I was a summer associate. And frankly, it's not typical for a litigator, particularly a litigation associate, to also get opportunities to do transactional work. And my firm has been very supportive in letting me do that in the sports and entertainment space. And it was really purely because I asked. And it was something that they knew was important to me. And they knew that I was developing and demonstrating the chops to do it and to do it well. And to the firm's credit, they've been really supportive of that.
It sounds like it's a wonderful culture there in the sense that they are able to recognize excellence.
Absolutely.
And they reward accordingly, which is wonderful. One other thing that you said is overcome both internal voices and the external voices. Particularly, we spoke a little bit before the interview started where you were saying that you're kind of struggling with the mentorship around boundaries and setting boundaries while also putting the people that you mentor in positions to excel. Can you just talk about that balance as we're talking about the culture of law firms?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've really found it to be a tough balance to strike because I'm at a point right now in my career as a senior associate where I do have a lot more control over my day-to-day than I did during my first, second, third year, et cetera. And now being in a position where I am viewed as that mentor for so many of the junior attorneys, particularly attorneys of color, I'm asked these questions about setting boundaries or what to do when certain boundaries aren't respected. And it is something that I struggle with in terms of giving advice, because on the one hand, I do want to put my mentees in a position to succeed. On the other hand, I want them to be happy. And that isn't always an easy balance to strike in a career like law, particularly in big law. And that's just reality everywhere, right? It's certainly not an indictment on any firm, certainly not my firm. But the reality is we are paid to be available a lot. And we've got client needs that pop up at all times of day, night, weekend, holiday, etc. So it's something that in many ways, I think I'm still trying to figure out the best advice to give. But I really do try to encourage people at the very least to feel empowered to speak their mind and to try as best they can to set boundaries within reason and within the context of the work that we're doing. So what I do regularly tell them is, unfortunately, that means that sometimes you're going to have to cancel your dinner plans. Sometimes you're going to have to make some certain adjustments. Sometimes you might need to bill a few hours while you're on vacation. But so long as what you're doing is aligned with what your goals are for your own career, many of those sacrifices are worth it. A couple of years ago, I got an email from Tony, my mentor, who he was working on a contract negotiation. He forgot that I was on vacation. I was down in Costa Rica. And he sent me the email. He got my out-of-office message and quickly emailed me again and said, don't worry about it. I'll find somebody else to do it. But I also knew that there weren't many other people at the firm at the time who were doing that kind of work. So I saw his email. I quickly reached out to him and said, listen, it's morning. I'm not really doing anything right now anyway, except sitting outside and enjoying the weather. I am more than happy to just get this done in a couple hours. And what better backdrop to be working on a contract like that than the Costa Rica jungle and with beautiful beaches? So I did it. And sure, I was working while on vacation, but it was something that I viewed as a not too heavy lift to continue to help me progress in the career that I want. And that's not to say that I advise people to not do the same kind of thing with matters that they're not particularly excited about. But I think looking at the big picture, for those of us who want to be very good lawyers, who want to have very successful careers, doing the work is at the core of growing. It really involves doing the work. And so I view that as a necessary sacrifice a lot of the time. I think where it gets a little bit trickier is where it starts to feel as though the job or the career starts to really impose upon or really infringe on someone's personal life, their family life, their relationships, et cetera. But I think when you look at the big picture and you try to keep the larger goals in mind, so long as you feel empowered and that you're taking the steps to be the lawyer that you want to be, then all of the other stuff, the sacrifices at the end of the day, at least in my experience, are really worth it.
I love this story because you also recognize that Tony didn't have a lot of options and you wanted to make sure that you supported him. And understanding the larger picture of what Tony was going through, I think is important, right? Tony wasn't just anyone. Tony actually said, don't worry about it. I actually see you on vacation. Right. That kind of mutual respect for each other is something that I think is really important because it really does help get the work done when you both know that you're coming from good places to really help support each other.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And the mutual respect point that you just made, I think, is the critical one. And it's one that I talk with partners a lot about because over the past several years, particularly in the wake of the George Floyd tragedy in 2020, I've been leaned on a lot for discussions around DEI, around the recruitment of attorneys of color, the retention of attorneys of color, et cetera. And what I regularly tell them is that we're not looking for any special treatment at all. And I think I do speak for most, if not all, attorneys of color. We really just want meaningful opportunities to grow and to feel that we're respected and valued in the process. And the best working relationships that I've had are ones that are rooted in or founded on that mutual respect and appreciation for each other. And it's really helped me to shine in many areas of the work that I've done, because when I feel that I'm getting that trust, that value, and that appreciation, it makes me want to work that much harder to make sure that I am doing everything I can to support the people that I'm working with. So there, it is a really mutually beneficial relationship. And I think that if we had more of that, or if we develop more of that within the legal industry as a whole, we're going to find some of those not so great statistics going down. We're going to see fewer mental health issues. We're going to see fewer reports about these large law firms that feel like sweatshops, right? I think it doesn't matter how busy I am. I have often found that I am my least stressed when I'm at my busiest. It's because I'm working with a lot of people that I love and respect, and they love and respect me. And we can be working those super long hours, those really long nights, days, et cetera. It almost doesn't feel like work sometimes. And I know that can be cliche, but it's true. I had a couple of trials in the spring where literally there were days where we're billing over 20 hours and then sleeping for 2 hours and then getting back to court. And I told them right after that, I would do this all over again because I love working with you guys. I love being in the trenches with you guys. So I think if we are intentional about developing those relationships, particularly in law firms, and that starts with the partners, to be clear, but also with the associates who are working with them, I think if we're intentional about developing those meaningful relationships among peers and among colleagues, the practice of law is going to become a lot more enjoyable for all of us who do it. And my hypothesis and my strong prediction is that as a result, the work quality is going to be that much better.
So based on everything that you've talked about today, what does leadership in law mean to you?
Leadership in law to me is leading with empathy, with compassion, with resilience, like we talked about before. I think the combination of those things really makes the practice of law enjoyable, and I'm a living testament to it. I've been really happy at Mintz, particularly over the past couple of years, because I've been working with people who do lead their teams with empathy, with compassion, and really with an eye towards creating opportunities. Tony is a great example, but there's plenty of attorneys at Mintz who have been very intentional about helping me grow because they listen to me. They listen to my professional desires. They want to help me get to where I want to get to. And because they have the benefit and the perspective of folks who have been doing it longer than I have, they're able to not only give me advice, but to be very proactive in putting opportunities in front of me because I've shown that investment in them. And I'll also add that the three co-chairs of the Sports Entertainment Group that I mentioned, including Tony, a year ago left the firm. They went to another big law firm. And in the wake of their move, I had this both internal and external dilemma of what am I going to do? Am I going to go with them to their new firm or am I going to stay where I am? And ultimately decided to stay at Mintz, which to me has been an excellent and really rewarding decision. But keeping with the theme and discussion about leadership, the departure of three high-profile partners, including the core of our sports entertainment practice, created opportunities for me to step up in a way that I don't know if I necessarily thought I was prepared for, but I think I just leaned into it and have really appreciated some of the opportunities that have come as a result. But I think based on and drawing from these great experiences that I've had with mentors before, I really felt ready by the time the work actually started coming. I felt ready to just step in and be that person who's able to do this stuff, not ask a bunch of questions, and really cement my place within the group.
You did the work, and that's why you were ready. And congratulations on increasing your leadership in the practice group.
I appreciate that.
What is something that other lawyers seem to misunderstand about the work that you do?
I think one major misconception is that being aggressive or abrasive is necessary to be an effective litigator or to be an effective trial attorney. And I really try to push back against that notion as well, because I think there's a time and place for that level of advocacy. My perspective on the practice of law is that we're all people and we're in a very people-driven industry. I try my best to be not only respectful, but just nice to people. And I have found that often, even with opposing counsel, the ones who reciprocate that kind of energy, the cases end up going a lot better, right? Because we find points where we can agree and we're able to reach resolution on some of the less significant issues, which helps to kind of streamline the entire process. It makes the judges happier when we're able to resolve certain things. But I've also dealt with some of the most obnoxious, aggressive opposing counsel, and nothing gets done. And then as a result, we've got like a bottleneck of things that need to get resolved. Nobody's happy. Every meet and confer call feels like it's a fight. And I just don't see the need for it, right? I think if we all approach this recognizing that we're human and we're all just doing work, this could be a much more pleasant and much more enjoyable atmosphere. And again, I know that because I've lived it. And whether it's interactions internally with colleagues or externally with opposing counsel, whoever it may be, if we're intentional about a culture shift, we can get there. And I think that the next generation of lawyers, next generation of the practice, I hope, and I'm very optimistic, will be one that's very different from some of the horror stories that we've read over the years.
When I was still practicing in my career, I observed opposing counsel that were really just obnoxious to each other. And there was a lot of hiccups, like you said, and bottlenecks that occurred. Yeah. And I actually think that's contrary to proper advocacy and representation. I actually think that it's borderline violates your ethical duty to your client because it creates those bottlenecks, right? And it's not properly representing them. So I agree with you. Civility between lawyers, especially between opposing counsel, is super important. And I'm glad to hear that you're taking that approach, because a loud lawyer does not make a good lawyer.
My view is often that they're not the good lawyers. If they're shouting and they're banging their chest, I usually assume that they're overcompensating for something.
Exactly, 100%. If there was one thing that you could change about the legal industry, what would it be?
Exactly that, the culture. I got very lucky to land at a place where I think culturally it's great, or at least a lot better than most. And I don't want to paint an overly rosy picture. You know, it's still hard, it's tough work. But I think that when you're around people who do take that extra time and put in that extra intention of being civil and being supportive, that makes a big difference. But I have no disillusions that this is what the industry as a whole is like. I do think that there's a lot that needs to change culturally within the legal profession. And it really does start with us, right? The next generation of future partners future leaders in firms, future leaders at companies, et cetera. If we don't take those steps to make those pivots, I think we're just going to keep seeing the recurring pattern of unhealthy lawyers, people who are really stressed out all the time and really unhappy. And I hate seeing people develop mental health issues because they're practicing law.
Yeah.
I really enjoy being a lawyer. I really enjoy practicing law. And I just hate the idea that doing something, in the case for me, doing something I love could result in people struggling in their personal lives, et cetera. So that's what I'd say I really would want to help change.
Yeah. And lawyers are important to society, right? We need them, and we need them to be not only willing to continue practicing, but also willing to do so with the right state of mind, right?
Absolutely.
So that they can create proper representation. So I agree with you. What is a piece of practical advice you can give to our listeners? These are leaders and future leaders in law.
Just listen to people and take the time to get to know the people around you, whether it's your colleagues, whether it's the people that you are, you know, opposite in the transaction or a litigation. They're all humans out here trying to make it. We're trying to feed our families. We're trying to grow. And I think keeping that perspective in mind, we can, A, make the industry certainly more reflective of the overall population by being open to different perspectives, being aware of biases that we have, et cetera, but also just make the overall industry, the overall landscape better. Doing all of this will make us better as attorneys, as law firms, as an industry. When you've got people who are passionate about what they do, who are enthusiastic about going to work, they're going to do their best work. And when everyone's doing their best work, that's a win for everybody.
Final question. What do you do for self-care?
Good question. I meditate. I started meditating right around the first time that I went to Costa Rica. And it's really made a huge difference, because I think all of us who do these high stress jobs and have a lot going on day to day, there is a tendency for our brains to start to get restless and to be constantly wired. And I think in order for me to be my best self and to be the best attorney that I can be, sometimes I need to let my brain relax and rest and recharge. And I have found that meditation has been a great way to do that. But outside of that, I try to spend as much time as I can with loved ones, whether it's my family, my girlfriend, et cetera. And I love sports. So sporting events and games, like, that's my happy place.
I should hope so. Considering everything we talked about, I was waiting for the sports one. Although the other two are extremely important.
Yeah, those are very important. And also the final thing is trying to give back to my community as much as I can. I do care a lot about investing in young people, particularly young people from communities that have been historically underrepresented, historically ignored. For me, that started with an organization called Crossroads. I joined their board in 2019. I joined the board of the Wiley Network shortly thereafter, and since then have been on advisory boards, or have joined advisory boards for the foundation to be named later, which actually nicely combines that passion for giving back and investing in young people, but also sports, because they're very closely tied to the Red Sox and Chicago Cubs. The organization was started by Theo Epstein and his brother Paul. And I also joined the advisory board of Harlem Lacrosse in their Boston chapter, which has been awesome. And a couple of weeks ago, joined the Boston advisory board for the Concussion Legacy Foundation, which is really helping to protect athletes who have sustained head injuries, but also prevent head injuries within amateur and professional sports.
Amazing. Thank you for sharing all those organizations too. I'm hoping that some of our listeners can get involved as well. And I want to thank you so much, Alan, for just being on the show. If anyone wanted to reach out and connect with you, what's the best way they can do that?
LinkedIn's pretty easy. Just search my name. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. And I've also been trying to be intentional about being active on Instagram as well. I've found it to be a great way to connect with clients and prospective clients, law students, etc. So my Instagram handle is alanmatthew.esq.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Alan, for being on the show again. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much. I'm a big fan of the show, so it's really an honor to be here with you.
Thank you, leaders and future leaders, for listening today. We have a new guest every week, so don't forget to join us next week. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe or follow us anywhere you listen to your favorite podcasts. You can also follow at Lawyers Who Lead on social. Let's celebrate and continue to build a community of leaders in law together. Lawyers Who Lead is made possible by Lawline, the leading online platform for lawyers who want engaging, relevant CLE and professional growth content. For over 20 years, Lawline has helped hundreds of thousands of attorneys level up by providing award-winning courses in hard-to-find areas and high-demand fields. They have so many courses to choose from that are actually really interesting to listen to and watch. That's why Lawline's rated the highest in the industry, with almost 5 stars and over 1,000 verified reviews on Trustpilot. Lawyers Who Lead listeners get $100 off Lawline's unlimited annual subscription, which means you can take as many courses as you want for a really good price. Just visit lawline.com/podcast to get the special offer. Check out Lawline for the best content for leaders and future leaders in legal.